Pennsylvania,
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania,
Keystone of democracy.
I love your valley even near, I always will. You're the one place that I am always for.
Once again, we present another in the series, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy. Historical dramatizations designed to show the part our own state of Pennsylvania plays in the life and success of these 48 United States. This series is prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense in order to better acquaint you with the glorious history of our great Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I roam, you will always be home, sweet home to me, Pennsylvania, my home.
That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Yes, you have heard those words before. We have all heard them, and perhaps we have heard them too often. Perhaps we have forgotten what they mean. Great words of a nation are repeated as they should be, but repetition dulls their light. Much use stales their flavor. Those words were said by a real man, by a raw-boned, lanky, awkward man. They were said in deep sincerity, and they were first spoken on the soil of Pennsylvania. It is 1863 in the city of Washington, and the autumn of the year has begun. The gray wave of Lee's Confederate Army has reached its highest crest in July on the dead strewn slopes of Cemetery Ridge at Gettysburg. The tide of rebellion is beginning to turn. And in the White House, Abraham Lincoln watches for the opportunity to end the rebellion quickly.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Hay. You have the news in the War Department?
Yes, sir. Grant's getting the West well organized.
Yes. You know, hey, I think we've got the best possible man out there. He seems to know what should be done. Our aim has to be to carry the fight to the South. We can't claim a victory simply because we keep the rebels from invading us. This has to be an offensive war. Only then will we get it over with in the quickest possible time. Well, what else? Any mail this morning?
Oh, the usual letters telling you how to win the war. Some routine dispatches. Oh, yes. Here's a curious circular from Harrisburg.
Circular from Harrisburg? What's it about, hey?
It seems that Governor Curtin of Pennsylvania has an arrangement with the other state governors to create a military cemetery for the men who were killed at Gettysburg. He's going to have the dedication exercises on November 19th. It's an invitation to come.
Gettysburg. But what's the curious about that?
Why, the fact that it's a circular, just a printed sheet, with the capitals probably full of them. They should have written you in person, even though you won't have time to go.
Worried again about the presidential dignity? I think you'll find that some clerk had instructions to mail the circulars to every public official in the country. But we'd better write them a letter.
A letter, sir?
Yes. I'm going to go to that dedication.
But, Mr. President, you don't know what might be happening by that time. Are you sure you'll have time?
Time? Yes, we're so rushed for time that sometimes we forget that the men who have died in this war, don't we? Oh, we'll write the letter, hey. I'm going.
And later in Harrisburg...
Obviously, Will. Some clerk made a terrible blunder and sent the president that circular the commission put out.
We should have written him, Carr. Perhaps we should have made him the orator of the day rather than Edward Everett.
Oh, now don't be ridiculous, Wills. Senator Everett is one of the greatest orators this nation had ever produced. I admit that sometimes the president has the ability to coin striking phrases in a rough sort of way, but he can't hold a candle to the senator. And aside from that, we never thought of him because we naturally assumed he'd be too busy to make a speech.
But now that we know he will honor the occasion by his presence, we should invite him to speak in the program.
But this is November 2nd, man. You think he'll have time to prepare a speech before the 19th?
Carr, I think that he's the best one to decide. Push that ink over here, will you, please? I'm going to draft a letter to him.
can get it authorized later.
But where will we put him on the program?
He can give the dedicatory remarks. Now, how about a paragraph like this? These grounds will be consecrated and set apart in this sacred purpose by appropriate ceremonies on Thursday, the 19th instant. I am authorized by the governors of the various states
to invite you to be present and participate in these ceremonies, which will doubtless be very imposing and solemnly impressive. It is the desire that after the oration, you, as chief executive of the nation, formally set apart these grounds to their sacred use by a few appropriate remarks. Well, there it is, Brooks. The New York Times readers can be informed that the president will be on the program and will give the dedicatory remark.
Thank you, Mr. President. This will make a good story. Have you given any thought to your speech, Mr. President?
Yes, Brooks, to some degree, although it's not written yet.
Do you know how long you'll speak, sir?
All I know, Brooks, is that it will be short. Short, very short.
Abraham!
Yes, Mary, come in.
Abraham, I don't know what you're thinking of. I just heard you're planning some silly trip to Gettysburg. Is that true?
Now, Mother, you mustn't get excited.
Excited? If I don't get excited about these things, who will? Don't you realize that the public will criticize you for making a trip like that at a time when you should be giving your full energies to the war? Perhaps you think I enjoy being the wife of a president whose people laugh at him.
Mother, I don't care whether they laugh or cry or what they do, as long as they realize that this war must be won. What their opinions are of me and the things I do is my least concern.
That may be all very fine, but what about me? The scorn reacts on your wife, you know.
Mary, you must be patient with me. I'm not going to make this trip as a pleasure jaunt, you know.
Then why, pray tell, are you making it?
Why? Why? Well, I'm making it because I'm thinking of all those very people who may laugh, and all those others in our country who have lost their loved ones, their sons, brothers, husbands, because those same sons and brothers and husbands deliberately chose to face death for their nation. That's why I'm going, Mary. I must speak to them, Mary. I must tell them that the cause they died for was the good cause, and that it must not fail. So, Mary, I'm going to Gettysburg, and I think that you can see why.
Yes, Abraham, I think I can.
Noon now on the 19th of November, 1863, just off the Taneytown Road near the town of Gettysburg. Troops are lined near the speaker's platform, which is covered with bunting and flags. The sun is shining. The military bands are playing. Procession from Gettysburg left at 10 o'clock, but there's been a delay as Edward Everett, the orator of the day, just now arrived. The political celebrities are on the platform. There are 15,000 people here at least. They're sitting in the sun. It's a warm day for November and waiting for Mr. Everett to begin his oration. He's standing now, a striking figure with his erect carriage and white hair. He's beginning to speak. Listen.
Over the fields, now reposing from the labors of the waning year, the mighty Alleghenies dimly towering before us, the graves of our brethren beneath our feet, it is with hesitation that I raise my poor voice to break the eloquent silence of God and nature.
Isn't he impressive looking, Daniel? What a speaker.
He's probably one of the greatest orators that ever lived. I heard his lecture on George Washington once. You know, he gave that talk 120 times in 3 years.
And Edward Everett goes on with his prepared oration. It lasts for an hour and 57 minutes. Finally closing with...
Down to the latest period of recorded time, in the glorious annals of our common country, there will be no brighter page than that which relates the Battle of Gettysburg.
The moment is coming close now. Senator Everett is seated, and a Baltimore singing organization has just given an ode by Benjamin B. French. And now Ward Hill Lehman of Pennsylvania is coming to the platform to introduce Mr. Lincoln.
The President of the United States.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war,
We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract. The world will little note, no long remember what we say here. But it can never forget what they did here.
Daniel, how tall he is. I never realized it while he was sitting down.
Yep, old Abe's built like a clothesboro. Funny thing.
What's funny?
He seems to be more sure of himself than he was the last time I heard him. I wonder what it is.
I'd like to set up my camera here and get a picture of the person who is making the speech.
We take increased proportion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of their
hope. It seems to be
that we here highly resolve,
I wonder what it is,
that these dead shall not have died in vain,
until I get the
that this nation shall, under God,
I'd like to get one,
have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people,
no,
by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
I'm ready to shoot.
But the president is finished.
He's what?
He's finished. See? Down.
Great gods and little fishes, and I haven't even made my picture yet.
Daniel, I didn't hear a word of it. What did he say?
Well, I said, well, I can't remember all the words, but somehow he seemed to say that we mustn't let the cause down, that it's important now that we keep fighting till we win.
Yes, the great speech caught many people off guard by its brevity. And yet there were those who were not caught, those who heard it and who took new courage from the words. That speech was to become the creed of America, the great summation of democratic faith.
Today, Pennsylvanians cherish the memory of Lincoln's steadfast faith and ultimate victory for the cause of liberty.
Today, in another struggle, Pennsylvanians are determined to see that our dead do not die in vain. Today, more than ever, Pennsylvanians are resolved to guarantee in perpetuity the words of Abraham Lincoln that
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom and a government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
You have just heard another in the series of broadcasts, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy, prepared and produced by the Pennsylvania Historical Commission in cooperation with the State Council of Defense. You can do your part today to aid in the fight for freedom by working harder, by producing more, making every minute count. You can help win the war. Listen in again next week for another chapter in the history of our glorious Commonwealth, Pennsylvania, Keystone of Democracy.
Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, and no matter where I